Accession number 28453, Reel 2.
Reel 2, Mrs. Laura Confino. My brother was studying in France at the hotel school in Thonon-les-Bains, and from there he was, well, he'd been there already 2 years, I think, and then we could not send any more money for him to continue his studies. So the director of the school let him work as, let's say, au pair, and he was able to do some work there and do his studies. But eventually he found a place for him in Annecy, in the mountains, in a beautiful hotel called Grand Hotel Beau Rivage. And there my brother studied and worked. Well, he didn't study so much. He worked and learned his profession, as it were. And one morning, that was the unoccupied area of France. But I have a letter which showed what happened to him. And that was written by the director of the college of the Collège Technique d'Industrie Hôtelière, dated 4th of May 1951, which gives a resume of the events leading up to Oswald's arrest in Annecy by the Germans in 1942. And the letter goes as follows. Here is the information I can give you regarding your brother Oswald Jacobi, who was in effect my pupil at the École Hôtelière in Thonon from 1938 to 1942. At the beginning of the war, when he could no longer pay his fees, your brother was kept at the school in au pair employment. Yeah. Nevertheless, at the end of June 1942, I was able to get for him a professional training period at Hotel Beau Rivage in Annecy in the hope that he would be able in this way to gain his professional qualifications. But during the course of that same summer, I cannot remember anymore if this happened in July or August, I received a visit from the Grand Rabbin of Paris, who came post haste to Thonon and informed me that Oswald Jacobi had been arrested by the Germans that morning around 5 or 6 o'clock, when he had not yet got up. The Germans took him away immediately. The Grand Rabbin asked me if it would be possible for me to intervene to release your brother. I evidently answered this appeal. I contracted first the sous-préfet de Thonon, then the Inspection Académique, but these two administrations declared themselves unable from the German authorities to obtain reliefs of all the young men arrested by them. I then phoned the Préfet de la Haute-Savoie at Annecy. He was away. I was able to contact the Secrétaire Général, who promised me to try and approach, though he did not give me much hope with regard to likely success. Since that date, I have not had either directly or indirectly any news of your brother. I hope that you were since able to obtain other information and would be much obliged if you inform me. And that was the letter I got from the director afterwards when I was looking for my brother. But my brother was deported that day, and I have a letter which, as I said, he scribbled on a piece of paper with pencil, and which was sent to acquaintances we had in Switzerland. And in that letter he said, "My dear Laura," this is translated now from French, When you will have received this letter, I shall be far away. I do not know even where. However, if I can write to our friend, I shall do so, and I hope he will send you a translation. I'm keeping all my hope and all my confidence, and I'm sure we shall see each other again some day. You must not be sad when you receive these lines, and you must also be courageous. The war will end one day, and good will triumph over evil. I'm sending you a very recent photo of myself. I received your two letters of June and July, and I hope that you will be very happy in your life. I write very badly because I'm in the train, which is taking me very far. I close now and ask you to greet all the family. I embrace you tenderly from afar and promise me to be courageous. Yours, Oswald. And that was the last thing I heard of him. And I searched for him and found absolutely nothing at all, until one day I was sent by a teacher I know. He got a memorial to the Jews deported from France 1942 to 1944, and in it there is a copy of Convoy 28th September 4, 1942, and it gives a list of deportees from France. And the Convoy 28, the names on this list were written on onion skin, and it is in very poor condition, it says here, and the names are beginning to rub off. Much of it was deciphered with a magnifying glass. It is subdivided into 25 sub-lists. And on this list is my brother's name, not spelled quite correctly. It becomes Jacobs instead of Jacobi, and it gives his first name, Oswald. But most of the names have information on where they were sent to, but some are blank, and in his case it is a blank. So I don't really know where he was finally sent, but obviously he did not survive.
And you would have heard that, had that note, while you were settled in England, I imagine.
Yes, of course I got it whilst I was in England.
In 1942 did you get it? Or would it
he wrote
later?
It in 42.
Yes, but did
and
you?
I would have got it during that that year.
Yes. I suppose, you know, just finishing this little story, if you wouldn't mind, sort of putting yourself now in 1942, would you have had any idea then what was going to happen to your brother in 1942? Now, you know, later on you had the benefit of hindsight, as it were, but at that time when you got the letter, what did you think?
Well, at that time I had been fairly happy that he was in Annecy at the Hotel Beau Rivage, and I thought he was quite safe there. And my aunt in London had been to France, actually, to see my brother, and they made arrangements that, if necessary, he should come to England. But somehow it didn't work out, and so he missed coming here and was deported from France.
What did you think would happen to him in 1942? Well, did you know?
I mean, when I got this letter and I knew what was going on in the world, I thought maybe the best thing that can happen to him is that he would be put to work somewhere. But I don't know. Now, this Catholic friend in Schmidt, Joshua Schmidt, in Frankfurt. And she's a very interesting woman, actually. And she said she had an acquaintance, a Nazi, in fact. Well, he had the Nazi badge under his lapel. And that was after the war. And he came to see her, and he said he was a psychic. And he said, you know, I know what happened to so-and-so. And he died. He threw himself against the electric fence and did not survive. And in fact, it was proved later on that it was absolutely true. And then he said, and I know what happened to Oswald. They did a medical experiment on him. Look, I can't prove it, can I? But she said he was an uncanny man, that he could sort of see things that nobody else could.
Well, thank you very much indeed, you know, for telling me the story of your brother, because I understand the museum is going to have a copy of that letter. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes.
You're going to be very kind and allow us to exhibit it. And of course your story can go alongside it.
Yes.
But picking up on your own experience now on the train, and this is going back to December 1938?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Right. If you could continue with the story from there.
Yes. Well, I arrived, we crossed from Harwich, Hook of Holland to Harwich, and I remember getting into the train and thought, oh my God, this is so comfortable. It was all very plush, and in Germany the trains were all wooden seats. And I thought it was marvellous. And then I remember seeing all the chimneys and the smoke coming out of the chimneys, and I thought it was very strange. And I arrived finally, I think it was Victoria Station, and I had my red handkerchief, and I met the family, and they lived in Hampstead, and so I was taken straight to Hampstead. And I met sort of all the different members of the family, and of course felt quite strange at first. It all seemed very strange. Mm-hmm. But I have letters which I wrote to my friend Joschel Schmidt and her husband, giving my first impressions. And she kept those letters and sent them to me later on. And they're quite interesting to see that I must have been fairly thin, because I gave long descriptions of all the things I had to eat, or was given to eat, which was very lavish, really. And I said I was being weighed to see if I was putting on weight. And I said that... They told me that I should change my hairstyle, and sort of little bits. And I went to London, and London was absolutely wonderful, I wrote, and the buildings are magnificent, and it takes an hour to get from A to B. And I mean, I was absolutely enthralled by London, I think. And then they decided, well, the best thing for me was to go to boarding school, because I had no English, just a few words. So I was sent to boarding school in Eastbourne. And the name of the school was Edenthorpe.
Edenthorpe?
Edenthorpe. And it had two headmistresses, Miss Burton and Miss Crumplin. And... I mean, that was a complete a change for me. I never thought that anything like this could exist, a school like that could exist. first of all, the school uniform, and it was summer and we had to wear lisle stockings, and I couldn't speak to anybody at first, of course, and nobody spoke German there, so that was quite difficult, but I think it was a very good thing for me, because I had to learn English very quickly. And when I didn't know something in English, I said it in French, which was quite funny. But I had to get used to food. I had to get used to sort of living with other people, other girls together, and sharing a dormitory. And the dormitory, I remember, was terribly cold, and the windows were always open, whether it was summer or winter, because it was considered very healthy. So every morning we had to make our beds, and we had prayers in the morning, and then the lessons started. But gradually I got into the swing of things, and I think I quite enjoyed it, really.
Were people kind to you?
Yes.
You know, all your family and the people in the boarding school, did you find people were welcoming?
Oh, they were very welcoming. But the sad thing for me was that in March, I mean, March 39, my relative came to see me, to tell me that my father had died. And that, of course, was... I always thought I'd see him again. I never sort of... when I left Germany, it never occurred to me that, you know, that was it, that he would be dead three months later. So that made me very, very unhappy there. And it took me quite a while to get over that. And my grandmother wrote to me, giving me long descriptions of everything, how she had looked after my father. And then, of course, awful thing, that my father wanted to be cremated, because my mother had been cremated, and he wanted to be buried in the same grave as her. And the Nazis had forbidden Jews to be cremated in Frankfurt. So my poor grandparents had to go to a place outside Frankfurt, which was called Offenbach, and they had to arrange for him to be cremated there. And then they came back with the urn to Frankfurt, and there was no rabbi or anybody. They just went with a friend, and they had my father interred the same grave as my mother. And that must have been an absolutely terrible experience for me. And so...
Excuse me, but were you a religious family? Did you go to synagogue?
Very rarely, because, I mean, Orthodox Jews are not really permitted to be cremated. And so this was not the case in my family. I mean, we did... my brother had his bar mitzvah, but we very rarely went to synagogue.
And was that the case with your relatives in England? Were they more sort of assimilated and less religious, or did you find they were religious people?
No, they were not. They were not. So, I mean, I... And, of course, when I went to boarding school... I lost all. In fact, my aunt, she had two children, and at the beginning of the war, they went to Canada, and I could not go with them because I did not have a British passport. In fact, my German passport expired in end of 39. And then I became, beginning of the war, I had to be classified as something or other. I became a friendly enemy alien. And that was lovely, you know. At least I was friendly. So, and when our school was evacuated to North Wales, to Bettsicoed, which was really a lovely place, but I had to report once a week at the police station there. And that was, I think, a very wonderful experience for them there, because they don't think they'd ever come across a friendly enemy alien. And every time when I came into the police station, they beamed. They said, Borida Karyat, which is good morning, sweetheart. And so we had a good laugh, and I signed my name and walked back to the school. And that was a very nice experience for me, actually. So I never found any ill will towards me by anybody anywhere, which was wonderful.
Were they interested in what had happened to you? You know, the girls at school and your teachers, the fact that you had gone through these awful experiences in Germany and Kristallnacht, did they have any understanding?
Well, you see, let me put it this way. My English wasn't good enough to start with, so I couldn't communicate. And also I found that we were not allowed newspapers. We did not, if we did listen to news on the radio, I don't think we did. And if we did, I wouldn't have understood what was going on. So the only information I got was really from letters which my grandmother sent me. And then I got, I was the only way I could communicate with my grandparents was with Red Cross letters. And you sort of had, I think, you could have 35 words, I can't remember exactly, on the one side, and when it reached them, they could, on the back of that paper, they could write their reply. And now, you never knew how long it would take to reach the addressees. So, extraordinarily, my grandmother wrote on the back of one of the letters, delighted, something like this, delighted to receive your letter. It arrived on our golden wedding anniversary. And I mean, that was sheer miracle that it happened like that. So I've got, I kept copies of all my grandmother's letters. I've got a box full of letters of family letters, and so I have now, in fact, made books for my family of record of family history, which at the moment they're at the bookbinders, and so I'm very pleased, in fact, that I've done it, and I had all these records. Now, I should also mention that when I left Germany with just a little suitcase, I had no family records, anything at all of my family. So my grandmother, before she was deported to Theresienstadt with my grandfather, in 42, she managed to give this Catholic friend of ours all kinds of family possessions. There were obviously family records, my mother's collection of my mother's books, which are here now. There are all kinds of special items which were important to me because they belonged to my family. Now, how my grandmother got these to my to our friends, I don't know, because at that time it was forbidden for Christians to have any contact with Jews. So how this was done, I don't know. But years later, I met our friend Joshua Schmidt, and she said that she was called in by the SS, by the Gestapo, sorry. And she could reenact the whole scene, how she was interrogated, and you know how they went with their hands behind their back and sort of strutted up and down the room. But she was a tremendously courageous and forceful lady, and they couldn't touch her, which was really quite amazing because she'd risked her life. And also, I got a letter, many letters in fact, from a lady who lived with my grandparents in our flat for a while. That was after my father died, of course. And she was eventually deported with them to Theresienstadt, but she survived and went to the States. But she gave me accounts of what happened in Frankfurt, and she said at one time they were not allowed to buy food anymore. And she said it was a big we had a home help for many years, and she was a Catholic actually, and she got married to a widower who had two or three sons. And when the Jews were not allowed to buy food anymore, she came at night time and brought my grandparents and this lady food into the house. And she said if it had not been for her, they would have died of hunger most miserably. So it just proves that there were Germans who were risked their own lives to help Jews.
End of reel two.